The first case on calendar is City of Reno versus Howard, case number 62313. Is counsel for the appellant prepared to proceed?
Yes, I am, Your Honor. May it please the Court, my name is Christopher Hazlett Stevens, and I represent the City of Reno on this interesting interplay between the Sixth Amendment and Nevada's statutory notice and demand scheme, which this Court, in City of Las Vegas versus Walsh, has already ruled as constitutional, and that the U.S. Supreme Court pointed to as one of the states that comports with the constitutional rule announced in the case that brings us here this morning. That's right. So Melendez-Diaz versus Massachusetts, the U.S. Supreme Court in that case pointed to Nevada's statutory notice and demand scheme as one that adheres to the constitutional rule that
they announced. Perhaps reading this case a little broadly?
I don't think so, because it said some states actually comport, already adhere to the constitutional rule we announced today. That's footnote 11, and then it footnotes in that 11 pinpoint cites the City of Las Vegas versus Walsh, and it includes in that citation the notice and demand scheme, including the substantial and bona fide issue. We are urging this Court to overturn Judge Freeman in his denial of the City's petition for writ of mandamus and compel Judge Howard to admit into evidence the declaration at issue, absent the defense being able to establish a substantial and bona fide issue as to the facts in the declaration. That's the exact way it's been done since 2005, when this Court issued its decision in City of Las Vegas versus Walsh. The Court City of Las Vegas versus Walsh says the statutory demand scheme is constitutional, the declarations are admissible unless the defendant can establish a substantial and bona fide issue. They said that it's aligned. The statutory scheme is aligned with the Sixth Amendment. It's aligned with Crawford because they examined that case in light of Crawford. And they said, in light of Crawford, we find this to be constitutionally aligned with the Sixth Amendment, and that the defendant can waive his constitutional right of confrontation by not being able to establish a substantial and bona fide issue. This Court said, focused its decision on the fact that cross-examination in most of these instances would be meaningless, to have the phlebotomist in court testifying and then nothing there for cross-examination. In 2009, the U.S. Supreme Court came out with Melendez-Diaz, and I think had zero impact on the way Nevada's statutory scheme works. The Court of Melendez-Diaz said, look, prosecution, we're not going to allow you to prove the results of analysis performed on seized material by way of a declaration or a certificate. If the defendant objects, you have to bring that person into court for cross-examination. And that makes sense, because there are relevant material areas of cross-examination for a forensic analyst. There might be issues as to the skills and abilities of a particular forensic analysis, the interpretation of the evidence they actually produce, the techniques they use, the methodologies they use, whether those methodologies are generally accepted in the scientific community. Those are all material areas of cross-examination that could have a bearing on the ultimate issue of the case. The Court also said, when it comes to forensic analysts, they could be driven by a need to answer a particular question, and they might forsake methodologies for expediency, and that, the Court said, was relevant to cross-examination, too.
Counsel, do we need to be concerned about what might appear to be a shift of the burden if we were to adopt your rationale? That is, that we are now placing a burden on the defendant to subpoena otherwise adverse witnesses?
That's an interesting issue, and that was developed in Briscoe. However, there is no requirement for the defendant to subpoena anyone into court. If there is a substantial and bona fide issue as to the facts contained in the declaration, the defendant merely has to make a showing of that. The prosecution is required to bring that person into court. There is no subpoena requirement under Nevada's statutory notice and demand scheme. When it comes to the confrontation of Nevada's forensic analyst, the statute is completely aligned with the holding of Melendez-Diaz. If the defense objects to the prosecution from proving the ultimate issue in a DUI case, that being the content and the amount of alcohol in someone's blood system, the prosecution has to bring that person in for direct and cross-examination. And that makes complete sense. It's consistent with Melendez-Diaz, because there are areas of cross-examination that are material and have bearing on the ultimate outcome of the case. Forensic
evidence. When a defendant makes a request under the statute, must the defendant articulate what is the substantial issue that requires the presence of the phlebotomist?
I think there are many ways to do it, and there is no clear
pattern. How did you just answer my question? Is it necessary for the defendant to articulate what is a substantial and material dispute requiring the phlebotomist's presence?
I believe it is.
And then it would seem that the trial judge is required to make an assessment about the extent of the dispute, whether it's truly substantial and material or bona fide, as the statute requires. Does that not necessarily implicate the Confrontation Clause, the litigation of whether the dispute is material and bona fide?
And yet trial judges are always responsible for what evidence comes into their courtroom. They have a broad discretion on how they admit evidence and what evidence comes into the courtroom. And that's consistent with 171-179, the ability of prosecution to establish an element of a crime in a preliminary hearing by way of an affidavit if that witness lives outside of the jurisdiction, outside of the state, or outside of 100 miles. And it's the same issue we have here. Yet those trial judges are allowed to assess that too. And in fact,
I don't think that quite answers my question. Doesn't the trial judge's assessment of whether the dispute identified by the defendant as being bona fide and substantial necessarily implicate the Confrontation Clause?
I believe it does have an impact on the Confrontation Clause, and I believe that's proper for the trial court to determine what and if there is any impact on the Sixth Amendment and on the defendant's ability to confront a witness.
That would seem to suggest, then, that our statute really is more than just a notice and demand statute, because it necessarily implicates an assessment of the dispute and its bona fide nature, which I would guess would require the trial judge to see the phlebotomist and know what the issue is.
That's exactly right. I think it does have a bearing on the Sixth Amendment, and then the answer is, what do we do about that? And is that inconsistent with the Melendez-Diaz and Bullcoming series of cases? But the declaration we're dealing with here is fundamentally different from the declaration in Melendez-Diaz or the forensic analyst declaration under our own statute. The declaration at issue here is being used simply to establish a foundational element under NRS 484C250. You recall that statute says that the results of analysis performed on blood taken to pursuant to a DUI investigation is not admissible unless it is shown that the blood was drawn by someone other than the police officer and it was drawn by one of these qualified people under the statute, or that it was drawn pursuant to a medically acceptable fashion.
Counsel, did I just hear you concede that if, in fact, this is not a foundational report or declaration, that there would be a problem with the Confrontation Clause?
I think if it were an element of the DUI, there might be an issue with the Confrontation Clause. That's why the statute that we have is aligned, as it points to the forensic analyst, is aligned with Melendez-Diaz. If the defendant objects, we have to bring that person into court to testify. That's appropriate. This is simply meeting a foundational element. It's akin to the affidavit of a custodian of records, perhaps, in a business record exception. Or, like I said earlier, it's akin to the 171-179 declarations in a preliminary hearing, where the prosecution can admit into evidence an affidavit of someone and not expose that person to cross-examination unless the defense establishes a substantial and bona fide issue as to the facts contained in that declaration. It's already been decided. It's already been here before you. I point to the case of Sheriff versus Weitzenberg in 122 Nevada 1056. The declaration at issue here goes no further than that. We're not trying to establish a chain of custody with regard to that declaration. The police officer testifies to that. The police officer is there the entire time. sees the blood go into the tubes, packages those tubes for evidence, puts it into the evidence locker, and there's our chain of custody. But that's live testimony by the police officer, not necessary to have the phlebotomist for that.
So the affidavit or the declaration, please, you're saying only established that the declarant was a phlebotomist?
That's,
and that's the only piece that you needed it for?
That's what I need it for. The declaration goes on to establish other things, such as I drew the blood of this person on this such and such a date at this time.
And chain of custody.
I believe it would be a chain of custody, too. However,
although there's no time difference. It looks like she immediately drew it and turned it over from
that. That's absolutely correct, and we established that by the officer's live testimony.
Okay, so but the officer couldn't say that she was a phlebotomist. You needed the affidavit or the declaration to prove
that. That's exactly right. And perhaps there's another way to do it. Perhaps we can get that in under a public records request of the phlebotomy board and get it in that way. Maybe there's another way. However, there is a statute scheme right there. 5315 says, look, this document is admissible, period. Doesn't say anything else except it's admissible to prove these certain foundational requirements. That's what we're using it for.
Counsel, you also have another statute. The city could have availed itself of 50.330 on the simultaneous audiovisual transmission, but the phlebotomist testifying from the crime lab or wherever, there be subject to cross-examination through audiovisual equipment and all, and that's been codified in Supreme Court rules. How come, in view of Melendez-Diaz, has the city thought about maybe hedging their bets and doing it that way rather than an affidavit where there's no cross-examination?
Fair enough, Your Honor, but I think there's two ways to go on this. We either read the statute as constitutionally permitted by this court already in the city of Las Vegas and by the U.S. Supreme Court pointing to it as an example. Or we say, look, we concede that the statute is unconstitutional, it's a burden-shifting statute, and we can't go through with it and disregard the statute and go in another way. But that's inconsistent with what we have. Now we've rendered a statutory scheme meaningless, and I don't think we can do that. I would rather this court actually address the issue, and then the legislature might actually act on the issue. But I've chosen, or at least the city so far has chosen, to pursue this as if the statute is constitutionally permissible, and we go in that fashion. If it isn't, there's another great way to do it. We do it already with toxicologists out in the rural counties, and that's perfectly appropriate. But right now, we're going with the principle that it's a valid statute. In regard to the, and again, I have to say that there aren't the fundamental areas of examination of a phlebotomist that there are in regard to a toxicologist.
Counsel.
Please.
You've made the statement, I guess the second or third time you've made it. The burden is on the state to prove their case beyond a reasonable doubt. Defense has no burden. You're asserting this because it's something that the state has to do. Why is that not testimonial, and why doesn't that get the full flavor of Crawford?
It could be testimonial. In fact, this court said it was testimonial, but if the defendant can waive his right to constitutional confrontation.
But you're putting a burden on the defendant when the defendant shows up in court and has no burden to begin with. The only burden is on the state to begin with.
And that's
to prove every element of their case. And you wouldn't be offering it if it wasn't an element.
I don't agree it's an element. I agree.
Then why did you put it in?
Because it's a foundational requirement under the statute. And if that weren't there, we wouldn't be here today.
If that was not there, you would have no case. Is that not correct?
I agree with that.
Well,
but again, they're fundamentally different than the declarations at issue in Melendez-Diaz. There is no area of cross-examination that can be meaningful and have an impact on the issue of the case, the elements of a DUI. Dr. Ritzlin in March 1987 said the drawing of blood is a rather simple function, and that's all we're doing is saying this is a phlebotomist and she drew the blood.
Counsel, it may be a very simple function, but in cases, and I date myself if I go back and give you the year and the time, but we had people who drew blood incorrectly by using alcohol swabs and such. So it can be a very fundamental issue.
Oh, I agree. It can be a fundamental issue, and I'm not saying it can't be. And if that were the case, that would be a substantial and bona fide issue. But as to what I use it for, the prosecution uses it for, we use it to establish the mere fundamental, foundational requirement that the person drawing blood is one of the qualified people under the statute. And to bring that person into court for that particular purpose and only that purpose, cross-examination becomes meaningless. I've done it.
The other question I have for you is, with the exception of a self-defense defense by a defendant, I'm not aware of other things that the defense is obligated to have to assert prior to trial.
Well, there's an assertion potentially of a entrapment defense. That's another assertion, affirmative defense, that they have to assert at or before trial. That's another
one. Use the word affirmative, just like the other.
That's right.
Is this affirmative?
Maybe the statute makes it an affirmative defense. I don't know. I don't know how this statute complies with the affirmative nature of some of the defenses, like defense of others or self-defense, and the affirmative nature of those offenses. But what we're asking you to do is to adhere to the limited holding of Melendez-Diaz that says the results. My time is up.
You may finish your thought.
I'm sorry?
You may finish your thought.
I would like you to adhere to the limited nature of the holding of Melendez-Diaz and not expand it to encompass the types of declarations at issue here. Thank you, Your Honors. Thank you.
Are you dividing your time?
I'm sorry, Your Honor.
Are you dividing your time at all?
No, we are not. Counsel has indicated that I would use the time. I would like to thank the court. My first time here in 29 years, and I finally got invited on behalf of co-counsel, my daughter, Karina Dunn, and myself. To address the issue immediately, Melendez-Diaz not only did not validate the statute in the state of Nevada, it specifically said we have no occasion to examine any statute. What we did say in Melendez-Diaz is that notice and demand is what is constitutional. There is no authority to say that a statute that indicates a bona fide, substantial and bona fide dispute, and it's in the interest of justice. We need to zero in on all the language, not just the bona fide dispute, because the discretion is still given to the trial court. Even if a substantial and bona fide dispute was established, the court could say it's not in the interest of justice. It's in the statute. So therefore, the trial court is determining which defendant has the right to confrontation. In Melendez-Diaz, there's certain what Nevada adopted was the constitutional principle. That is, a testimonial statement is in fact, or does raise confrontational issues. It did not say that we have some, what statutory device would be used to raise the confrontational issue. What it said was, we can set the time that a defendant may be required to say, I want the witness. And you can do that ahead of time. No other burden has been established by the United States Supreme Court. What they said in Melendez-Diaz very specifically was, it's up to the prosecution to decide what steps in the chain of custody are so crucial as to require evidence, but what testimony is introduced must, if the defendant objects, be brought in live. There's no exception. Can a person waive their right? Absolutely. But the waiver of right would be that the person did not object to the evidence. If the prosecution says we want to use affidavits, and if the defense then decides to waive the right to not require the witness to be there, the defense can say nothing, or the defense can say we stipulate. But absent that, the biggest problem with this statute is the statute has a bona fide dispute. The statute doesn't require the witness to be unavailable. There's no evidence in this particular case that the witness was unavailable. If the witness is truly unavailable, then the catch-22 is, how does the defense establish a bona fide dispute with the facts of the affidavit when the witness is not available? It's an impossible burden. It's a hurdle that cannot be surpassed. Dispensing with cross-examination because evidence is obviously reliable is like dispensing with a jury trial because the defendant is obviously guilty. Confrontation is a fundamental right. What the city is attempting to say is that these witnesses aren't that important, so you don't need to cross-examine them. Yet this court has held in Walsh that these statements are testimonial, that they're being provided for the specific purpose of providing evidence against the defendant. If they're testimonial, the Sixth Amendment is involved, and absent a waiver of that right, the prosecution under Melendez-Diaz is required to produce the witness. The other problem
is do you agree that the only area of dispute here that the city needed this declaration for was to prove that the person who drew the blood was in fact a phlebotomist?
I do not.
Okay. Tell me why.
Nevada Revised Statute 484C.250 sets forth the elements that are required to be proven before the blood is admissible into evidence. It must be whole blood, drawn in a medically accepted manner. There are a number of factors that they establish.
But here you had a police officer who witnessed the blood draw, as I understand the facts.
Correct.
So that police officer could be cross-examined on the proceeding of drawing the blood, correct?
I don't think the police officer is qualified to do that, to say that it was drawn in a medically accepted manner, that even though the officer may say somebody else did this with iodine or some non-alcohol swab, the officer doesn't have personal knowledge or is qualified to make those statements. They're not qualified to draw blood, and in fact, the legislature specifically provided police officers can't draw blood, and there's a reason for that. I don't know that that statute's up for debate today, but basically, a police officer providing the testimony, they can say what they observed. I have no problem with that. But the way to address this, and it is more, I've never seen a witness called a phlebotomist that wasn't asked questions that had some meaningful outcome in terms of the case itself.
If the only area of dispute that the city needed this declaration for was to establish that the person who drew the blood was a phlebotomist, would that implicate the Confrontation Clause in such a way that your client could not constitutionally be required to come forward with some showing that there was a dispute as to whether this person was or was not a phlebotomist?
I think what makes, if I'm attempting to address the question, if I understand it, Your Honor, that if the only issue used in an affidavit to say this person is who they purport to be, what makes this particular declaration testimonial is the fact that it's prepared in anticipation of prosecution and it's being submitted in lieu of live testimony. Now, any testimonial document, as this court has held in Walsh, implicates the Constitution, the Confrontation Clause. So when they're preparing these things for purposes of prosecution, Confrontation Clause becomes an issue. But they're not preparing these affidavits to just say this person has a label of being a phlebotomist. They're also identifying who the person is. They're identifying when the blood was drawn. They're identifying the fact that it was drawn in a medically accepted manner, as we talked about whether they use an alcohol or a non-alcohol swab. These things aren't just to say, I have a title, I have a name badge. They're used for more than that. And under 484C250, they're required to have more than that. If we have gotten to the point where phlebotomists are so routine and accepted in the scientific community, the legislature can address that. The legislature can say, because it's actually the legislative act is why the city is using these particular affidavits in lieu of the live witnesses, because they have to provide certain statutorily required elements in order for the blood to be admissible. The legislature can say, we don't need those anymore. We can actually eliminate the requirement, then the city can decide if the chain of custody is implicated.
Mr. Dunn, if the defendant was uncertain about the phlebotomist in the declaration, I would assume it would be prudent for the defense to say, I want this person to testify.
I'm sorry, Your Honor?
I presume it would be prudent for the defense lawyer to say, I want this person to testify.
Right.
So that I can confirm under oath that they are a phlebotomist, or that they don't have any sanctions against their license or some other issues that might call into question their qualifications for the blood draw at issue.
Yes, Your Honor. In fact, in Bull Cumming, one of the issues is where the government attempted to use a substitute analyst for one who was no longer available because the person was either left under circumstances that were not clear. And if you had a truly unavailable witness, as we don't necessarily have in this case, if you had a truly somebody who left, was terminated, somebody, there was some question about their qualifications, some question, and they're not neutral in terms, the science may be neutral, but they're still witnesses, just like any other witness. So the Confrontation Clause implicates more than just cross-examination.
I presume under our statutory scheme, if you went to Judge Howard and said, I want the phlebotomist to testify because I'm uncertain about whether this phlebotomist is truly certified or has disciplinary issues against the phlebotomist or other issues that might call into question the validity of the blood draw. And the judge is going to say to you under our statute, what is the evidence, what is the information that you have that makes that substantial and bona fide? And I would guess that if it involves information that's confidential within the confines of the Certification and Licensing Board, you may not have that information.
That's the problem, Your Honor. Cross-examination being the essence of confrontation, most of these issues will actually arise during cross-examination, not ahead of time. We don't know that there's a problem. We don't know that there's a problem with the chain of custody. We don't know that there's a problem with the person's licensing or their proficiency, methodology, and credibility. The only way to discern those are not from the face of an affidavit, but in actuality, a face-to-face confrontation with the witness themselves. So it would be nice.
Does that fact make our statute different than the notice and demand statutes discussed in other states, where an individual is required to identify their wish to have the witness present 10 days before the trial?
We have no problem with the notice and demand portion of NRS 50.315. The problem we have is subsection 6 that adds the additional requirements that are simply something we don't understand. I don't know what a bona fide dispute is. I don't know what a substantial and bona fide dispute is. I don't know what's in the interest of justice. And those things cannot be gleaned from the face of an affidavit. In fact, this court in Vega, when they were examining Melendez-Diaz, actually went into and talked about the factors that Melendez-Diaz talked about, methodology, proficiency, and credibility. Those are factors that are only gleaned from cross-examination. We don't know what those factors are. It would just be fortuitous, as it were, for us to discover that maybe someone is has been sanctioned or let go or their qualifications aren't what they purport to be. We discover these things through face-to-face confrontation. We discover these things when the state decides this is the portion of the chain of custody that needs to be put into evidence, and they bring in and we object because we are given notice. I have no problem with that system. That system, I think, would pass constitutional muster. I think is exactly what Melendez-Diaz was speaking of. I think it fulfills all the obligations under Crawford. What doesn't is to substitute a statute that imposes a burden that we don't know what it is. We really don't.
Do we have in this record, what at the point at which your client challenges the admissibility of this declaration, does your client say, I want to cross-examine the phlebotomist because I'm concerned whether he or she is a phlebotomist in good standing, and I think I need to do that. I need to confront that witness. Or did your client just stand down from it and say, this statute's unconstitutional, I can't be required to articulate my concerns with the declaration? Which was it?
It was a little bit of both, Your Honor.
Okay.
What actually happened is that the city sent a notice to the defense saying we want to use the affidavits in lieu of the witness. We filed then, before trial, an objection, and what we cited in the objection was specifically credibility, proficiency, methodology,
okay.
And we specifically asserted the right to confront the witness. That was done long before the trial. We didn't wait till trial and then say, oh, by the way, now we object. That did not occur in this case. The notice and demand portion that we would not, that we would find to be constitutional was actually complied with in terms of us being notified they wanted to use the affidavits, and we filed a timely objection. So it didn't happen in the midst of trial.
So in terms of us trying to construe this statute constitutionally and narrowly, you did say we want to go into the Melendez-Diaz factors with this witness, in essence, credibility, reliability, proficiency.
That's exactly what occurred in this case, okay. Your Honor. The last point I'd like to address just briefly is the fact that if really what's going on is this particular statute, if you construe it as the city wants you to construe it, would actually be a statute that would give the discretion to the trial judge to determine whether the evidence is in fact reliable. It's actually a presumption under the statute that it's reliable, because if we don't raise a bona fide dispute outside the affidavit or within the affidavit, we're not sure which, then we have waived it. So the statute as it stands, if defense were silent, would say that it's basically Ohio versus Roberts, that this is actually has some indicia of reliability. That was rejected by the United States Supreme Court and replaced by the ability for us to then have a simple notice and demand in which the city says we want to use an affidavit. We file an objection. They bring in the witness. An exception to that, no authority has found it.
Do you think a video presentation of the witness satisfies confrontation?
It does, and it's in practice. It's done all the time. We practice in rural counties, and we have video testimony all the time. Thank you, Your Honor.
Very well. This matter will stand submitted, and we'll be at ease until the next group of lawyers comes forward.